You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. We are very excited for you to join us this week. I am your host, Parisha, and I have my co-hosts with me that are kind of all over the world, and actually a lot of fun people, a lot of people dedicated to a much greater consciousness than what we're seeing and going flying around on Facebook and the news these days. So I have with me Joyce Mollenhauer, who is a nurse, but also a homeopathic doctor. And Joyce has worked with senior people and hospice, helping people come to the final moments of life and spending time with them, giving them an opportunity to see the greater reality of the life after. And she also does a lot and has her own webpage of how she talks about remedies and herbs and things to your good. So you might want to look up Joyce Mollenhauer, okay? And then I have Drina, yeah, good name there. Trina Cooper, okay? And she's in Denver. Trina runs a spiritual center as well as does a lot of teaching. Her and her husband do major productions in disaster restoration, and Trina brings the spirituality of all the many things that she's learned to people who would not ordinarily hear stuff like this. So she does very well with her work as well. Okay, and then I have Rosemary Heyer, and she's over there in Frankfurt, Germany. So guess what? It's like in the middle of the night, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And if you look at her and see her, she looks as fresh as if she was talking at 8 a.m. So we welcome Rosemary. Now, Rosemary is a translator, and she actually teaches English. And for many years, Rosemary has brought groups from Germany and actually taking them to sacred sites in very, very places of old civilizations and what we would call sacred places. And so she's with us today, too. And then we have Marianne Love. And Marianne is in Melbourne, Australia. And Marianne is a therapist. And she actually applies a lot of what her spiritual adventures have taught her. And she shares that in the many healing modalities to actually help with consciousness. And then I have Geraldine Dalby Ball, who is actually, Geraldine, what do you want to call yourself? I call you an environmental engineer. Am I off?
I think that applies very well. I looked up the word engineer, and it certainly is something I resonate with. And it's what we do daily.
Yeah, and Geraldine actually spends her day in what she calls work, which is so natural to her, I don't believe she thinks it's work, okay? And that's to take care of the forest and the creatures of the forest and definitely protect Mother Earth and the nature that we have all around us of beauty and grace and love. And so those are my co-hosts. They're very interesting ladies, and we have journeyed through many phases of our life together. So we see ourselves more as associates as well, not just co-hosts and hosts, okay? And what we're actually talking to and who's with us today is actually, who I know is Elizabeth Ritchie, and her name is actually Dutois, okay? And her book, okay, if you can see that. And for those of you who are not viewing, it's called The Whole Kit and Caboodle. And it's as sacred as 1, 2, 3, okay? And to spell her name, which means spring frog, so on her new updated edition, you'll actually see that that's on the front of the book too, spring frog. And it's actually spelled D-U, okay, T-S-U, and it's pronounced tutoi. Almost what you hear the frog say, tutoi, tutoi, okay? So actually, that's her name. And she does what we call, that's her spiritual name. And what she does is resonate to the attributes of that particular, what we would call totem. Okay. So at this point, we have her with us, and we want to discuss what we're getting out of this. When she says the whole kit and caboodle is as sacred as 1, 2, 3, She's dealing a lot here with what we know and can see as Christian spirituality, okay? And being very devout Christian herself for her whole life, and actually seeing where people kind of get overzealous with the fundamentalism of it. She's actually brought it to greater heights. And actually, in the things that she shares in this book, she actually helps us see how the scriptures, what we call biblical scriptures, are actually sciences. They coincide very much with the sciences that we've learned now to be our spiritual sciences, quantum physics. Okay, we also see biology, chemistry, all of that that actually lets us see that we are a greater consciousness than just a body. Okay, so at this point, we'll actually be going through a lot of that. And we've been showing for the previous weeks, we've been showing you the kind of cartoons. She's made it playful. I mean, the subject is very serious, right? But she's made it very playful. So she's done a lot of cartoon kind of things in here to help you read it easier and to actually make it fun. So she's made little faces like this and a little cartoon. I'm just going to call them cartoons because that's how I see them. And they pop up at the right time, you know, to actually let you see what her point is from a very exciting, almost childlike, play-like situation. And because of that, I've used this book with youth groups and children, as well as religious, what I would consider open-minded religious Christians, okay? And that they begin to see another way of seeing what they were very dogmatic about. So I've used this book in many ways, and I've used parts of this book and the points that she's made in a lot of presentations and things that I do working with my Native American family as well. So excuse that. All right. So let's begin this week. So co-hosts, there are definitely parts in here I'm sure you have found that you would like to ask, and Elizabeth is on with us. So you could ask Elizabeth directly some questions on the particular points of interest, okay? I have one on page 150, Elizabeth. And on page 150, you actually say, yourselves from each other with hatred and strife. Thus you separate yourself from God, the good, okay? Human consciousness is the controlling responsible factor for earthly events, believe it or not. You do it all to yourselves with my help. Together, you create your own fate. You suck ideas out of the darkness of your own mind and finding them in each other like thunderbolts. You create your own fate. You have the audacity to tap the hidden, ineffable darkness for ideas, and then you use ideas to crucify each other. Evolution is right. No creationism. I am right. You are wrong. Mine is the only truth. This is good. This is evil. There is no spirit, only the material. Jesus only saves. The rest are damned. There is only one God, mine. So she's kind of thrown some statements and some particular, what I would consider some harsh things that we actually put to ourselves with that. Elizabeth, what was the base of you wanting to make that point? Was there a place in your life of experiencing that, or you just...
Yes, there definitely was a time when I encountered this sort of...
Dogma.
Dogma, yeah. I remember walking down the street in my little town in Pennsylvania, and somebody was passing out pamphlets, and I was probably 14, maybe. And they said, are you saved, or are you going to go to hell? You know, and I'm like, you know, and I had always considered, I grew up going to a church, so I thought I was doing, you know, I'd be saved, I suppose. I never really thought of it because my church didn't use that language very much. But then I began to question, and am I saved? And I held that in the back of my mind for quite a few years, because there was a lot of people that were saying, are you saved? Have you made Jesus Christ your Savior and that sort of thing? So when I got to college, I confronted myself with that same question. And And I did meet a Jesus. I don't like to use those terms, but it's a good term. Jesus freak.
Yeah.
And that's when I took a serious look at myself and my heart and what my heart was doing, because that's the way it was presented to me at the time by a good friend that I had made, just run into a man my age, another student whose name was Doug. And Doug said, you know, he would look at people and I would say, well, why do people act like this? And then he would be very charitable and very compassionate about whatever meanness or you know, the kind of things that I objected to in people, and shed a really gentle light on them and a loving light on them. And I owe it a lot to him, because not every Christian would have responded in that way.
True.
And so it came down to one night where said, you can just ask Jesus Christ into your life. And that made, and I did it. I didn't want to do it. I mean, cause I felt this tearing, oh no, I'm going to give up this and give up that. And it was very dramatic for me. But I did do it. I felt then afterwards something rush in. I actually read the beginning of the book of John. Very, very in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. And for the first time in my life, it made sense to me. And it made sense in a real, such a profound way that I don't necessarily think I could have explained it at the time. So yes, that was filled, that was part of my experience there, that page, and a lot of what is in there. And I decided to major in religion. So I then was confronted with and exposed to Eastern spirituality. I had friends that were very much, very interested in Eastern spirituality. And I didn't want to discount that. And I think that's makes my education, and I did major in religion, is different than so many other Christians who kind of stop at the Bible.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And I see so many of the other traditions saying the same thing in different ways. And they all have something to offer.
And all religions do. I totally agree with you. And there is a common ground. Once you really have read and thoroughly know the scriptures, and you go as you have actually studying theology, I've done that. And actually everywhere I go, I've personally been interested and want to know people's religions and what's important to them and what they believe. And in it, I find the common ground that goes back to whatever the Christian scriptures or whatever the other scriptures, there is a commonality in it. And yet everybody crucifies the other religions, like you said here. I love how you actually make your point here. You use ideas to crucify each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, you know, this, I think that you're probably giving a lot of credit here to this young man, Doug, on that, you know. And evolution is right, no creationism. And like I said, for you to be able to say something like that and to actually let Christians actually get a taste of that, that's actually very exciting. And I'm happy that you see that. The other fact is that in your search and you being a devout Christian yourself for most of your life, like you said, in your church, I see you dealing very much, I've been through this book, I've went through your book at least 5-6 times already, okay, since the first edition that you shared with me. And when I look at it, I realize that the biggest message that you constantly do, and you make your points, but in your point, you're always bringing in the fact that it is unity, and it is us seeing our likeness that is our power and what will deliver us no matter what we believe. And I see how you take the devil out of it, and I see how hell does not dominate here, and that you actually show the audacity to question and want answers. And I don't feel that the fundamental part of religions actually support that. It's blasphemous for you to doubt. It's blasphemous for you to ask a question. And I think you give comfort to people who would never have asked the questions that you're answering. And I think that in that, it's such a wonderful gift that you've provided. And I'm happy to see that you've actually added a new part to it moving forward with it. Very, very happy to see that. And Joyce, have you decided what particular page you would like to discuss with her?
Get off of mute here. Can you hear me? Okay. There was a number of pages that really struck me. I love the fact that you built on your beginnings of kind of confronting people with, you probably won't like what I'm saying. You probably won't agree with what I'm saying. But I just ask you to hang in, because by the time you finish my book, you might have some new ideas. So I just think that's extremely helpful. And there's some of the things as you go on with deeper information. I love the fact that you ask people, what do they think they're broadcasting out? And because we're definitely studying that from different angles with Nassim Haramein and others, that we do make an influence beyond our own little circle. So you have just covered so many, many aspects that are beyond what the average person has ever wanted to think about and has even known that they could think about, and ask some questions to have them ask themselves those questions. So I greatly appreciated that.
Okay, very, very good. So I would like you to actually pick a page, co-host, and actually read it and share what's in the book, and then actually ask Elizabeth to explain to us where she was at that particular time and what that means to her, okay? So can we start with you, Rosemarie?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I'm on page 107, and I really like, Elizabeth, that you are going into science and that you are actually saying, I love that when you're saying, we need a science which must feed the soul, not just the body. I realize that, not just the material world, so to speak. And I'm quoting from page 107, in your usual beautiful way, you say, heck no, says Spirit Divine. Mm-hmm. It's time for a science of the spirit. Drag those pure thinkers out of their ivory towers and force them to tell you the truth, that science supports the existence of the so-called miracles. Your illnesses can be healed with the energy of thought and meditation. You can live on the sunlight. Of course, the page 108 on top, of course, I never intended to simply reveal myself under an electron microscope or through a telescope to just anyone. In every age, only true seekers find me. And then you got this beautiful cartoon. I don't know if I can show it. It says, it shows, can you see it? Eureka, I have found God in the microscope. I really like that. Anyway, what I think is really great that you're putting that up with a new science, because I think that's really important with all the statements you are making, that there's a lot of physicists, and especially Dr. Fred Alan Wolf, which you come to later, and who are actually exploring physics and consciousness. And I really like that you're saying that we have to have a science of soul. I feel that, and I don't know how you, I would like to know how you're feeling about it. I really believe that you cannot really understand that what we call God through the microscope or through science alone. I think that it needs to be combined with an inward journey, actually, that you are actually have the knowledge, and at the same time, you're going on an inward journey, maybe to prayer, reflection, or meditation, or being in the present, being aware, learning to be in the present moment. I was wondering what you think about that, or if you think that we are really able to say through science, yes, we know what God is. That was my question, and was thinking maybe you can explore on that.
Elizabeth?
I'm of the opinion that we have to have some field of study or knowledge, philosophy, mm-hmm. that goes beyond what science, in this day and age at least, has to say about our reality and our universe. It can explain, it's kind of catching up with spirituality, very much so. But then spirituality in and of itself provides so much that science has, is going to, it's going to take a while, because a lot of science is what I call, and I speak about this in this section of the book. Science became very, what I call, and what I got the word, the usage of the word from Rudolf Steiner, really, is materialistic. It's materialistic science, where everything you whatever you find in the reality, say you look under a microscope and you see atoms, and they're material little bits, and you break everything down into its little pieces, and I always think, hey, you're not going to see the forest for the trees, you're not going to see the greatness and the what we might call God, and what grandmother said at the very beginning, the unity and the harmony that's taking place when you're just picking at these little pieces and studying the little pieces, and they look all like they're little objects that are randomly appearing. So I do think science has, with Nassim Harriman and Fred Allen Wolf and all Michael Talbot, The Holographic Universe, there's have been wonderful books written and teachers that are very educated in the scientific method and science itself, and they're astrophysicists and that sort of thing. And that's wonderful, because they really stand side by side. But I rewrote a back cover of my book just the other day. Happened to have it here. And I said, and one of the words that I used, because in this book I show like this little marriage between science and spirit, spirituality. And I say, on the back of my cover, I say, in my book, I announce the romance and nuptial bliss of the scientific and spiritual, of the scientific and the spiritual, the knowledge of and faith in the transcendent. And I use the word transcendent because that's all encompassing, encompasses everything, the all that is. And that's where I think science falls short. It just doesn't acknowledge something that transcends physical reality and backs it up in a glorious, hard to explain manner that's provides a person, when they experience it, with a kind of ecstasy and love, and you experience all these wonderful emotions related to this transcendent reality. And I'm kind of waiting for science to catch up to that, I'd say.
Well, what's really exciting about it too is a point Joyce was actually sharing as well, You're not omitting your faith. You're not trying to go find something else to replace your Christianity. You're really exploring and finding greater depth of Christianity. And so, you know, this book would not be anti-Christ at all. It would actually show so much more than what people have been allowed to have. And I think you do that on every page. And that's why I feel that people who are pretty much locked into just letting their clergy interpret the scriptures, you give them something to look at, but you don't take away Christ, nor do you take away the teachings of Jesus. You actually enhance them with what you're saying. And a lot of things from most people who have left the church, and I get a lot of people who will actually say they've turned to spirituality, metaphysics, or science or something because they can't find answers in their religion. And it's like, well, see, you can't, what answers are you seeking? So religion gave you something to go find. You haven't left your religion because you're still trying to find answers to understand it. So when you talk about somebody raising in the, you know, fiery chariots, you now can, in our science, not in the days when the Bible was interpreted, but in our time, we would know that they're talking about spacecraft. And we would know that there's also very, very old tablets in different civilizations and cultures that are actually telling us how our creation, we, the body human, has been actually developed in a laboratory, okay? And so we kind of challenge Darwinism and all the other things that comes. But what it actually does, I think, you know, very recently, because of questions my granddaughter had, I've gone back through the New Testament with her. And when you read the New Testament, knowing all of the sciences that we've studied and the gift of reflection you've given here, you begin to feel a love that was always there, a love of Christ that was always there, especially if your roots are in Christianity. And what I find that even when I go across the world with the many, many religions that have invited me to their table, and when they start talking and they in themselves will acknowledge the Christian faith and Jesus, they themselves are willing to do that. I just find it not acceptable that Christians aren't the same way. Do you hear what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think your book is a bridge for that. And I really, really hope that if any of our listeners are actually still having a problem with their Bible, that they take time to read this and actually see where they can put those pieces together. Because your book is a bridge. Really, really good. Okay, and we're going to go over to Trina. Trina, what page have you found that you want to discuss?
Well, I'm going to do a little prelude to it, but it's 127. And the idea that was brought forward in this is the idea of the past and the present and the now. And you open it up with the idea of a triangle that we're taught about, the idea of a triangle has three sides, it has three angles, but that this concept has existed in time before we ever learned it, and it will continue to exist in time, and that the rule of triangles live in the realm of eternity. So you make a couple statements like the principles are eternal, symbols are eternal, and the idea of triangle lives in the realm of universal truth. So on page 127, it says, at one time you learned about a triangle in the past. Now as you think of it, you're dealing solely with a supersensible notion. And you describe supersensible as outside the use of the senses. So having nothing to do with what you're physically tasting, eating, smelling, touching, or hearing. Ideas of triangles, as it were, float in the sea of universal ideas, past and future, as an ideal, waiting to be fleshed out by inquiring minds or fished out by inquiring minds. Ideas pop into your head. Where do they come from? Your physical brain serves up the idea to you, but the idea, once learned, connects you with a universal reality that is independent of your brain or body. The idea of the triangle comes from a place outside of time, where the universal principles of triangles hang out. The law of triangularity reverberates eternally. Your mind recognizes this reverberation. You say, aha, I know what a triangle is. And everyone agrees. Humans call ideals, universal truths, laws and principles are maintained outside of the fleeting world of the moment. And when the mind grasps at truth, it is reaching for something which extends itself through all of time. And when the mind reaches, it often finds. Supersensible consciousness gives the human being access to the realm beyond the present moment. Consciousness connects humanity to eternity. Consciousness connects the human being to the place where intelligent, eternal ideals dwell. Ideals and principles live in a manner totally unlike human life. Ideals and principles and beings that embody ideals, yes, beings, live unchanging and undying in the realm of spirit. And I love... You expanded that idea outside the box more than saying, where so many of the books will say, oh, well, there's the past and then there's the present. But the only time you can do anything is in the now because it's your taste, touch, or whatever. But you really opened up the box in this to the fact that these things are there and we can grasp them. And so I just wanted you to talk a little bit about where that concept came in or how you brought that forward, what made you put that into this book?
Good question. Actually, again, I'm going to reference Rudolf Steiner in Anthroposophy. He was a big philosopher and wrote a lot. And at one time, I was very an avid student. And but I worked it out also in my own mind. And sometimes Steiner is difficult to access. He's very intellectual. And so what I am reminded of here when I read about the triangles is the principle or the nature of the logos, the L-O-G-O-S, the logos, the word, which is what Christians, I don't know if many Christians know it, some probably, lots of them do, but the beginning of John begins, in the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God, and nowhere was there anything else but what was with the word and God. So, and that word is translated from the Greek, from the word logos, which is Greek, and it's the same root as logic, you know, logical thinking. And so what it means to me is if the logos itself, and it stands in a certain way as a opposite of chaos. Logos is something that lives, is very, very logical. It lives according to rules. It's very ordered and harmonious. And it's an expression to me of all that's wonderful about God, because it's total harmony and beauty. And it exists and is maintained outside of what we usually experience. And we can see it in nature. We can see that beautiful harmony and manifesting in nature. And then humans kind of mess it all up. they take hold of it and just mess it all up. But that it's the logos, the logical arrangement of the perfect harmonious. And lately I've been looking into sacred geometry. And that sacred geometry is so perfectly ordered, and the numbers of and the mathematics of it is so impressive, and its frequency and music, and it's everything that has to do with our reality is so well ordered, so logical, and our minds can grasp that when we start to look at it. And that's when we experience the logos. And the little tiny triangle, the little triangle is just one tiny example of something that is so profound.
Yes.
This little idea that lives forever. Just by definition, what we think of as a triangle, and everybody knows a triangle, and it's like this something magical that we can embrace with our minds.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I watched when Trina was reading, and Trina, you did a great job of reading. You really put emphasis in it. It made it very real to hear you read this, okay? And I watched you, and Elizabeth, I saw that you were actually reading yourself and a little bit in awe of yourself, weren't you? What I know as a writer is that after I've wrote something, and I'm sure all of my co-hosts do, because we all do this, right? And then you go back and you read it. You're kind of in awe that come out of you. You know what I mean? And I watched you following it just very intently. And I realized she's discovering, I wrote that. I said that. You know what I mean? And I could see it real clear on you. And it's like, yes, you did. And this is, you've explained how you actually decided to make this, to write this book and to take where you took it and everything. And this book is self-discovery for you, isn't it? I mean, you go back and you read this, and we're asking you to tell us where you were at that time. Okay, you're seeing a whole lifetime of learning and searching and wanting answers and exploring. So this is, I see you as we read this to do that. You're such a joy to work with. And again, I cannot say enough appreciation for the fact that you've given me this book, and that I can use it to actually go through the most clumsiest part of answering people's questions about the Bible and the things that they don't dare ask their clergy for fear of being damned for it or whatever, and that you've given it to us in such a pure way. and that it really comes a part of your spirit to where you're actually learning of yourself as you read your own book. It's really cool. I think it's really, really cool. Okay. All right, let's go to Marianne Love down there in Melbourne in the Down Under. And Marianne, what page do you want to discuss?
Hi there. Yeah, one of the pages that I guess one of my favorite pages in this book is on page 198 and 199. And you talk about here that humans are co-creators. You must apply the energy of love, of appreciation, of joy to the wonders of the natural rhythms and natural gifts of clean air, clean water, sunlight, and abundant foods. And in doing so, your creative energy creates and recreates these things from out of the invisible, omnipresent, divine potential. Here is humanity's divine mission: to seek to become free, responsible, self-conscious, co-creative citizens of all the cosmos who with all heart and soul desire habitation of an ethereal, eternal, light-filled realm of ideal beings.
Yes.
And at the end of it, so profound, Elizabeth, so beautiful. And at the end of it, you say, humans are this planet. We care for your heavenly body and earth. Clean her, adorn her. And I feel like that for me encapsulates just the beauty of this book, the journey you've taken us to, and, you know, my personal mission on this earth, and I think the mission of many that are listening to this call, I think. And I guess it'd be really nice to hear from you about this page. And, I mean, you've said here humans are co-creators, and you've also said humans are this planet, and I think that's a... you know, and they're both sides of the page. So I'd be really curious also to get your perspective on that.
Right.
Mm. All right.
That's so profound.
I love it. All right. Go for that.
You'd left out the paragraph that you and your ancestors have co-mingled your blood and DNA with the earth, transforming her through eons of time. Indeed, the earth is just as much your heavenly body as your own flesh and blood is. However difficult it may be to understand, it is a metaphysical fact that humans are this planet.
So powerful. Oh, so powerful. Like it's every goosebump, every cell in my body standing up, Elizabeth. This is great. Where were you when you started looking at this?
Where was I? Raising two little boys running around the woods. I was in the woods.
Wait a minute. I want you to do something right now. Share again with us how long it took you to write this book.
It took me 12 years.
Mm. So what?
Well, 12 long years.
When you started, you had the majority of it together, you said. So how long did that?
When I started, it took me, it was actually... during an Easter vacation, my husband was a teacher, and he took my children to visit his parents my two little boys. And I stayed home and wrote the book while he was there. Mm. He took the kids. And I, for some reason, I remember it as 3 weeks, but I don't think it was that long. But I wrote 100 pages, and it was really from start to finish. And for the next 12 years, I embellished it. So I knew where it was going, but I just kept wanting to fill things in. And if people don't realize, I guess they realize, but I was felt like I was supposed to be talking for God and explaining everything with God's voice. So I didn't want to make any mistakes.
You did a great job. And I think that Marianne chose this. And what you just read, you and your ancestors have co-mingled your blood and DNA with the earth. Very, very powerful. Very powerful. And definitely a new way of seeing things for a lot of people who have just been lost just in the scripture, the dogma. Beautiful. Now, where were you at with that? Where were you? Were you in your studies of Native American spirituality then? And was it sort of in a time period when you began to become more aware of you as an earthling and the attachment of the earth is you, the universe is you, that kind of stuff?
I honestly don't remember why or where I got this, but I do remember that I heard somewhere that once an atom or a molecule of something has become part of a human being, it's changed. It's never the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that every time somebody is dust to dust, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and buried, the physical being of the earth changes and becomes some. It's a gift of the body and the person who was living in that body. It actually changes the earth, and then the idea, for instance, of Amado, the Japanese scientist who took pictures of water, and right, it reminded me of that when I heard that. I mean, it was several years later when I heard about those experiments with water and how our thoughts can influence the water itself. Yeah. And so it seemed to be a similar kind of relationship as describing that the DNA is given to the earth and then it changes it. And I wish I can't really give it the source. I know I read it somewhere.
You said it.
It just didn't appear to, you know, come to me.
You said it in a way that you definitely own how you put it. So that's wonderful to hear you share. And it actually just, again, you pointed out how much more we are in God's, in the fact that in the scriptures say we are children of the same God. You know what I mean? So like you, I'm sure some of you quote that yourself anymore because I've said it so often. If the crow grows up to be a crow and the kitten grows up to be a cat, the dog grows up to be, the puppy grows up to be the dog, what do children of God grow up to be? And so you're making that very clear. We grow up seeking to be as godlike as we can. This is beautiful. So we're going to turn over to Geraldine, who's over there in Sydney, Australia. And Geraldine, what page did you choose to share?
236. It is your sacred commission, your sacred responsibility to be caretakers, stewards of the earth. You were created to be earth keepers, big capital letters. So shape up. Every tree, every flower, the winds and the rains are due acknowledgement, appreciation and respect, just as any and every person. And then in small print, of course, the sad truth is nowadays people do not appreciate, honour and respect their own fellow species members. What am I doing? Trying to convince people to honor non-humans as people. What, am I crazy or what? Better call my therapist. Even God has doubts, but only for a moment.
Okay.
That's the next page for those who've got the book. The next page gives you some solutions, but I would like to now just hand back to Elizabeth because, or to and toi, Spring Frog, because, you know, where we could ask, I could ask that same question today, which is why when I said, okay, we're choosing a page and it fell open on this page, it's also an acknowledgement of the power of this book. It's almost like divining crystals or cards or runes. It's the page that opens to you at any time that's correct. So I'd love to know where you are at with that and how it is for us now.
Well, there's no doubt about it that I gathered and I reaped what grandmother had been teaching at that time, and her influence upon me, because the earth keepers, that's where I got that word, earth keepers. We are the earth keepers. And so that is the Native American, you might say, influence. And it's still... I mean, as you said, the sad truth, it's just not a reality yet for us to relate to every flower and every tree and the winds and so on with acknowledgement and appreciation and respect. It's I don't want to give up hope. I don't give up hope, of course not. But that's I'd say I owe a lot to grandmother and her teachings for that this page. Great deal.
I think also that Geraldine, you chose that because you have your own. You have your own voice and you have your own feelings. I'm sure there's a lot of sharing in these particular pages because, you know, every once in a while, I don't know if you've seen this in yourself, Elizabeth, but you'll take us so far and then you come back to earth spirituality and identity. And then you'll go a few more steps and then you come back to it. And what Geraldine has picked here is like way back in the front of the book, there were several. Now you've come to this. So as you're coming to the end of the book, you're getting more powerful in your stance with that, with your message with that. And Geraldine, with all my heart, I could tell you she lives that. It isn't just something she read. She lives that. She's in the forest every day. She's on the planet every day. She's nurturing nature with everything she's got. So you might have some comments of your own you want to make with that.
The key part would be that question, you know, what am I doing trying to convince people to honor non-humans as people? And really, it's the next page. If that's okay, if I read the next page.
Yes, absolutely.
Hear me, O grandchildren, the word is incarnate in the creation. The earth is sacred ground. I speak to you with many voices, in a burning bush, perhaps, or indeed in the cooing of a dove, or in the flight of an eagle, in the shape of the clouds and in the appearance of rainbows. Go out into the wilderness and fast. Take a jug of water if you must. Maybe you'll start hearing voices then, or see my countenance in the creation. Just do it. Go outside and learn to love it. My revelations, as with the creation, are unceasing and ongoing. Verily, if you honor the divine voice of intelligence as it manifests in both human and non-human forms, sooner or later, you will learn to understand exactly what it is saying everywhere. Every rock and stone will start to sing, and you will awaken yourself. When enough people do this, the new heaven and the new earth will be manifest in this planetary realm. It is your choice, your will, your responsibility. My choice, my will, my responsibility. I really feel that answers it.
Oh, yeah. And it's what we all, I mean, the five of us, the six of us, we all go through that in ourselves. I know what I teach is get out of your house, get out of the room, get outside, live outside as much as you can. When I look back through my life and realize what some people consider the advantage I have in regards to my spiritual abilities, whatever I do, right? It's because my winters, I spent my winters getting up in the morning, having a warm drink, but spending my day in the snow and the elements by the rivers, the frozen rivers, always being in nature. And so when you go into those closed walls and most of your day is inside those walls, you are not allowing by osmosis for you to actually grow and know what it is that you're seeking to find answers with. It is in nature. One of the things I've shared recently with, I don't know who you call those people, you probably have a name for it, Geraldine, to when they study creatures and they can kind of tell you the particular attributes or the patterns of different species in that. They have a name. I just can't remember what it is. Okay. But I have a little hummingbird, which, you know, I've had hummingbirds around me all my life, and I've never seen one nest or one actually claim its own space, right? And, of course, we have a feeder, hummingbird feeder out there. And, of course, I have scads of flowers and everything. So there's lots of hummingbirds around, right? And all of a sudden, I started noticing. And this little guy come and just kept hovering in front of me when I would go outside to do my meditations or just walk around and be a part of the beautiful garden and sanctuary I've created, right? And so this little bird has found he's nested in the tree that is closest to where I sit. He lives in that tree. And it's really strange for me to see a hummingbird sitting, you know what I'm saying? But he goes in there in his little branch and he sits and he watches me. And when other hummingbirds come to drink of the you know, the particular waters that I give and get with the flowers, he's real aggressive. You know, he goes out and buzzes all around them and tries to scare them away and everything, you know. And then, and I scold him and I tell him, there's so much, let them share, you know. And then he hovers a little bit and he runs back to his tree, right? And it's like, in watching that, I started looking at him and laughing, because what do siblings do? You know, when we're siblings, what do our children do? What do we even still do as adults? And it's like, you see so much reflected to you in nature. And like, I actually said to him one of the times, he was fluttering only about 8 inches away from me. He gets it. He looks right into my face and my eyes, you know, and it's like, what do you want? I'm asking, what do you want? You know, what can I get for you? And then I actually said to him, and why are you staying so close, and what is it that you hang around here for? Okay. He landed on my book. Elizabeth, it was your book. I just got the book in the mail, because we've been sharing pages that Joyce has been giving us to do the show. I got the book and I'm going out and I'm highlighting things in it. And where did he land? When I asked him, what can I do? What are you here for? He landed on your book and he stayed there. He pecked around to the red on the letters on your book. Then he flew back in his tree, sitting there looking at me. I believe that he was talking. Do you understand? I'm like you, Geraldine goes out. She knows that the animals are leading her, that the forest is helping her, and everything is communicating. And it's the time we wake up to that, that the more we're outside and out of our walls, the more we are real. And we're not real if we feel the spirituality is inside them walls. No. And that what is definitely very present, what you've all shared with me in our time together, okay, is the earth is the altar. The sky is the steeple. And the in-between is the message, which is us. And that's Native American concept of what a church is. And it's, you need to be outside. And Elizabeth, you have given us so much reason to go out and read what you've shared here and actually feel it, to actually feel it. And to, like I said, at I make sure I eat all of my meals outside. When our family is talking and wants to visit, I won't sit and watch TV. I make them all come outside. Making them means you got to come outside if you're going to talk to me, right? And so we do that. So we have found reasons to, like, go harvest the fruits that are growing on our tree or something, but staying outside. And then there's times that I'll just say to people, I need to go up the mountain. And everybody will say, sure. And then we get up, we go up the mountain and we crawl around on the rocks and we watch the squirrels and everybody. And they're becoming more aware of talking to me. And I'm talking about my family, more aware and talking to me about the discovery they're making by being in it. Mm-hmm. So it's in nature, and you've captured that very much. It's in nature that the presence of God is overwhelming. And you've given us that. We so, so appreciate that. I'd like each of your hosts to actually share your thoughts with Elizabeth, because this will be the last week we're actually viewing her book. I'd like each to share your particular appreciation to her with what she shared with us. And we definitely will start next week with Fred Allen Wolfe's book, okay, Mind into Matter, okay? So, please, co-hosts, we could start with you, Joyce. Would you like to do a closing with Elizabeth?
Sure. Elizabeth, I just really very grateful, because I see, I've gone through this book once, but I see that I can go through it a number of times. I can find sections of it that I will be able to share with people, and I will certainly be buying more of these books so that I can give them away, because that way I can know that people have a chance to read them themselves. It's not a book I wouldn't think that one would sit and read all one evening. There is so much thought that you have expressed. And some things people, it's alien to them. But I think more often, and maybe this is just a optimistic hope of mine, I think more often readers are going to have things fit into place in their own heads, and it will move them in a direction that we all would like to see. So again, I appreciate your book very much.
All right. Okay. How about you, Trina? You want to share?
Yes. I just want to say thank you. So much appreciation, Elizabeth, for you putting this book together with all the ideas and concepts and the the beautiful blending. And, you know, I very much kind of walk between different religions and things too. And just the way you pulled all the pieces together gives me a lot to be able to say and share with people. And I too would, you know, we'll be sharing this book with more. But I think I shared with you as well that I think the children are ones that can benefit from some of this wisdom that's in this book. And I know you've said you're going to write another book. And so I'm really hoping that a story comes out of this, because I think it would be fabulous to touch them with their young, when they're young, so it expands. Again, so much appreciation to you for bringing this.
And that comes from a grandmother. Of how many grandbabies do you have?
9.
See, she's looking after her own tribe when she's telling you this. So we have like 2 or 3 minutes here. Please, co-host, give your completion. Mary Ann, Geraldine, can you want to jump in here with something?
Rose? Sure. Elizabeth, I think this is a beautiful place where people can look at their opposites and look at where they are at in the consciousness now and where we're heading. And I think regardless of your religious perspective, you've given everybody the opportunity to really explore ourselves in a fun, lighthearted, sometimes serious way with science. So I'm going to use this book just to open up to a page and meditate on it and just really explore it, because I feel like it will be fun to use this book that way and see what the page speaks to me. And I think other people could do that. So thank you very much for your energy, love, time, and coming on the program with us too. It's been wonderful.
Right. Rosemary?
Yes, I want to thank you too and appreciate all the work you put in and the 12 years of your studies and the humor. I like the humor and the science and the knowledge mixed up in this format, and it's really very good. And I feel like Joyce too. I just have to go back into it and really use it and share it with others. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Geraldine.
And absolutely, as the spring frog, it's a song, you know, it's a song that's come out, and I feel spring is representative of what happens when the winter has passed and we out and emerge. So this is an out and emerge time. And the more people I hear like starting to murmur, it's, well, when I was in COVID time or shut down this, it is an emerging time. So it can even be the sort of thing that you could even have a Zoom based business, you know, dinner party. So you don't have to all be in the same room. If you can't, just pick a page and have it as a discussion. So the key with the book, as we just read in that part, it's each of our responsibility. So you've given us a way to respond with ability. Open up what might be otherwise, you know, people say, don't talk about politics or religion and stuff. No. Okay. Well, let's just talk about a page from here then, you know, and I really think it's a tool. This is a whole toolbox to allow an opening up and a new time, a spring where we sing. And I also acknowledge that you are absolutely decades ahead, because so much science now is touching on the things that you mentioned, like the triangle with the 2, 3, 4 frequency, you know, the Pythagoras one, and that's music. That's, you know, there's so much in here that I'm sure everything that you've put in here from an inspiration point, science is now jumping further ahead, as you said, to bring the two together.
Wonderful. Okay, again, I want to remind our listeners we will be starting Mind Into Matter by Fred Allen Wolf next Wednesday. So please definitely get the book and start looking into it. I'm sure that everybody's on this call with me have the book if you have not put it away already, because we've gone back to that book several times. Okay, and Elizabeth, there is not enough words to say just how deep our appreciation is. And as a fellow associate in the Learning Center for Human Development, and all of the many years that you have contributed generously with time, love, and energy to the many needs and what goes on in the world, as far as the world's needs, the forest, the children of the forest, the waters, as well as the two-leggeds. And I thank you very much. And I acknowledge you as tutwa. We enjoy having you here. Okay.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful. I appreciate all of you so much. It's wonderful. Thank you.
You're beautiful inside and out. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, people. We will co-host. We will be looking forward to next week. Everybody have a fantastic week, and definitely keep passing the book around and reading. Okay. Be well, be kind. OCO.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club.
for more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.